The pace of new technology can cause a bit of digital cultural shock sometimes. And as you try to adjust, don't forget customer experience, maybe even use new technology to improve it. Accenture has mapped out some suggestions for federal agencies to keep pace. Dominic Del Molino is Chief Technology Officer for Accenture Federal Services. He lays out for Federal News Radio's Eric White some ideas in the company's Technology Vision 2016.
One of the things we found with the technology vision is that since, you know, the digital technologies are evolving even more fast than people had predicted, it's even more important now for a people-first kind of structure to how we approach digital technology. That technology is changing so fast and can be overwhelming, and so it's really important to make sure that we put people at the center of that so they can leverage and take advantage of and exploit the technologies to their best ability. And we find that when we open that opportunity to people, we get a lot more innovation and a lot more creativity. And so I think while we're seeing a lot of innovative and interesting technology trends, it's really the impact on people that's really starting to have an impact for government.
Yeah, the people-first approach intrigued me. What do you guys mean by that?
One of the things we're seeing is as people start to adapt and adopt technology, so things like one of the big ones is this intelligent automation, we're seeing people start to accept the concept of a digital assistant or what people used to call artificial intelligence. And now they're becoming more accepting of having someone at their side that can prompt them with ideas, can help make work more easy to perform. But they're becoming more accepting of that technology. But introducing that into the workplace requires some thought and some care into how it can be best applied or best made available to people.
And so how do agencies keep up on this technology and make sure that people are at the center of it?
So one of the ways I think is important is to understand that how training is involved in this. So one of the other areas we're seeing in the study is the idea of this platform economy. And so training is evolving from what used to be kind of the simple CBT or training seminars to a platform where people can go and learn things and collaborate and share ideas so that they can be better prepared to look at new kinds of technology that is appearing in the workplace. And they can do it not only by asking maybe their supervisor, but they can interact with a community of people at their level. And so these platforms let people identify colleagues that maybe are encountering the same questions and let them share cross with each other to better understand how this technology is getting introduced into the workplace and how they can better adapt their own work and job to handle some of those incoming technologies.
So that's a pretty good segue into your second identified trend here of liquid workforce being able to transform yourself to new technology. What kind of things do you recommend for the workforce there?
So it's really fascinating. The liquid workforce is really like the idea of telecommuting on steroids now. We're seeing people and agencies encourage the use of remote workers, not only in the D.C. area, but even across the country. So this ability to give someone the opportunity to participate in government, even though they don't have to physically be in the D.C. area, is really a neat way to really leverage a broader workforce and to engage people who maybe weren't always previously engaged in government, but want to contribute, want to participate, and it gives them an opportunity to do it in a remote fashion, maybe via virtual fashion. And so we're seeing that extension of what used to be just the basic kind of telecommuting concept into this broader ability to enable people to work at their own pace and contribute when they can with ideas that maybe previously weren't available.
Yeah, speaking of getting people involved who aren't usually involved, a lot of the federal workers I talk to and know have said that, hey, I'll take the lower pay and maybe not as many benefits, but it feels great to be able to get up and just go right to my desk.
Absolutely. And not only that, I think we're finding people who want to work in government, but maybe we're unsure of the process and the approach to getting a full-time government opportunity, and they want to contribute. And so we're seeing the opportunity now and it overlaps with the platform. So some of the agencies are saying, well, we have a bounty program to fix bugs on our systems, or we have a small need. Can we open up like a micro-purchasing platform to let civic hackers or people who are part of the Code for America movement contribute? And so it's not just the traditional worker, but the opportunity for anyone to contribute in a civic sense. And you're absolutely right. It provides a nice ability for the traditional worker to say, I'd like to back off a bit and have spend some more flexible time, maybe learn more from the community and bring more energy to my job if I'm not necessarily the only person who has this. I draw on a broader liquid workforce now.
So explain to me this predictable disruption, because that sounds kind of like an oxymoron there.
It really does, doesn't it? And when I first started understanding this trend as it was emerging in our survey results, it really was that kind of, how can disruption be predictable? I think what this means is we're seeing so much disruption in the industry of new technologies appearing that you can start to determine how that disruption will impact your agency. Drones are a great example of this, right? As drones have appeared and become something that's more of a consumer technology or is more broadly adopted, you know, how do we adjust our regulations, adjust our law enforcement approaches for when this kind of technology is now broadly available? And so what we're seeing with our agency partners is getting in front of that and saying, this is what we're seeing appear in the marketplace, and so how do we get in front of it? And since we can predict where those things start to disrupt, how do we start to adapt our systems and our culture to handling that new area of technology that's being adopted by our customers and by our workers?
Do you have any examples of specific agencies that are able to be out in front of the technology before it disrupts the market?
One of the things I think we're seeing is, particularly in the Homeland Security space, is they're really thinking hard about how they can be ahead of some of these things occurring. Because I think there's that overlap between law enforcement and citizen services and protection that we're seeing in the Homeland space, where they're really starting to get in front of, how do we leverage this technology? How do we let people work more quickly? How do we let their disruption work more closely with our ability to get our mission done faster? Some of the really interesting things you're seeing in the ability to do, like, electronic customs forms fill outs, you know, the thing you had to fill out on the plane each time, and how that's getting to be something people want to do on an app, on a phone. So would they get a code when it's done and they can scan it when they come through the line? I had heard a report the other day that there's the new way to do this is even faster than global entry, for example. And so taking advantage of that disruptive ability of people with smartphones to now speed their ability to perform the mission that they have to do is really exciting.
We're speaking with Dominic Delmolino. He's the Chief Technology Officer for Accenture Federal Services. And to segue, once again, why not? There is an increase in the use of technology, and people are putting more and more information about themselves out there in the digital world, such as a customs form, as you just mentioned. How do you make sure that people feel secure that the tools they are using are safe?
That's a great question. And so one of the things we're seeing in digital trust is, just like you're saying, as people start to make more of their information available in this seamless fashion, onto the platforms and things, they have a concern about, how will that information be used, and how can I be sure that it's being used for the purpose that I was asked for, right? So how do I protect not only that my personal information, but maybe its reuse and its portability? And so I think what we're starting to see here is broad adoption of the ability to encrypt my data and certify that it's myself. So not only the fact that I can protect my data when I share it, but also assure someone that it came from me, right? And so there's identity management has really come of age. And not only identity management, which we're seeing with TSA, Transportation Security Administration in particular, but also this ability to say, when I share my information, I want more control over how it's used. And so I might share it in an encrypted fashion, and when you want to use it, you may have to ask me for the key to decrypt, and it can only be used when it's decrypted for a short period of time, and then, you know, like that tape on Mission Impossible, right? It self-destructs, right? So I think there's this aspect of, how can I control my information and secure it? And I think that's going to become much more broadly available as individuals have a power on their own devices to encrypt their personal information before sharing it and when sharing it. So on the flip side, agencies are going to have to understand, how do I deal with an environment where I may have to ask permission every time I want to use someone's data?
And getting away from personal information, you mentioned the increased use of artificial intelligence. How do you bridge that trust and make sure that we're controlling artificial intelligence, not to go conspiracy theorist or anything like that, but just getting it to do what you wanted it to do and what it's programmed to do?
That's a great question as well. So one of the things I'm impressed with when I interact with some of the digital assistants I work with is they report back what they heard me ask for and what process they use to determine an answer or perform the action. And I think this will be very critical for government as they maybe start to move routine processing of certain applications or forms to an artificial intelligence system. It'll be extremely important to make sure that those systems are auditable and clear about why they made a choice and what was the basis for a decision, right? So when we expect humans to be able to testify or state why they made a decision, artificial intelligence may not understand or be equipped or prepared to answer back with that. And so I think as we see AI becoming adopted by government, we're going to want to build in those safeguards to say when we build a system to help us make decisions, remember that we have to have it justify and document and audit the basis for those decisions so that we can be really open and transparent about why the AI may have made a decision. And that'll help, I think, build up the trust. When you can feel like there's an openness and transparency around what an intelligent automated process does, I think that makes people feel a lot better than if it's some black box.
Dominic Del Molino is Chief Technology Officer for Accenture Federal Services, speaking with Federal News Radio's Eric White. Read the report and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.